Yeah, that's. I'm so ready. So not ready. Spending more money on this record I've ever spent before on anything, and I'm like, not ready. Not ready. You know what I mean? Which is probably a great thing. I'm just going with the idea, or Brian has me convinced that it's great. You know, it's going to be great. We're going to go, and we're going to do it. You know, because there is no other time to make this record, and we have like 8 really fabulous songs, we think, you know, and so with 8, you figure you're going to get 2 more, but the panic is that nothing else will ever come, you know, like, I will never write another song, and stuff like that, so. So this is, the title is in this song, it's called Overdrive. We burn this guitar, stop all the songs, and silence my voice from singing, and set my soul's desires on overdrive, so they just disintegrate, yeah, from spinning, 'cause I have made a huge mistake out here on my own. I'm like the soldier in the quicksand, baby, and I'm gasping for air. But if I just stop struggling, maybe you could find me. Yeah, you, my love, my great escape.
Hello, you are listening to show number 44 of The Lesbian Mafia, and I am your host, Sandy. Hi, how are you guys? This is part 2 of the Melissa Ferrick interview, so I'm very happy to bring you that. And I was hollering and wooting during the Prop 8 protest in New York City, which was one of hundreds of protests around the country and incidentally around the world. I know they had some protests in Australia and England and Canada, and what an awesome response to what has happened with Proposition 8 and the others in Arizona and Florida. But what makes Prop 8 unique, and I'm not sure that a lot of people understand this, what makes Prop 8 different is that marriage rights were given by the courts and then they were taken away. And I'm not really sure how it is possible for people to vote to take away rights. I don't understand it. I'm so clueless and confused by how this could happen. I'm just very confused. You know, in the other states, they voted to discriminate so that you couldn't get the rights, but the rights were already given. How can you I don't get it. Please, somebody help me understand. I don't know, but I will say this, that I knew it was going to be a huge turnout in Manhattan because, you know, anything that happens in the city is always a really big turnout. But I had no idea what I was in for. I don't know. I haven't checked what the numbers were. Some people were saying 10,000. I don't know. When I drove, I got there late, and I was driving down Broadway, and there was, I can't tell you, it was just so amazing to see all of these people. Incredible. And the way that I knew that I was in the right area was because I started seeing lesbian couples, and I was like, oh, look, lesbians. But wow, a lot of women couples, it was very, very interesting to see that. And if I may say, and I'm definitely not looking right now, but there were some fine ass women at that Prop 8 rally. That's silly. Right? To notice that, silly? But aside that, there was so many straight people there with their signs, and it was so, like, it was really amazing to see that. And we were standing next to this couple, and I mean, they were cheering and, you know, as loud as anybody else, and there were couples everywhere and with their signs, you know, straights against hate, straight but not narrow, you know, like straight stop the hate, like all these wonderful signs. And I mean, it was really it was really amazing to see that. We have a lot of straight, it's very hard to talk about this without getting emotional, but, you know, we have a lot of straight allies. But there were really a lot of fun things that happened. Like a lot of the other signs, you know, gay people are very creative. There was a lot of really funny freaking signs. Like there was this one, and this guy was holding it so that everybody could see it. Like he positioned it. Like it said, "Girl, no, you didn't just take my rights." It was funny. Like you had to see it and the way it was written, and you know. And then the chants were great. You know, what do we want? Equal rights. When do we want them? Now. And then like it turned into, what do we want? Starbucks. When do we want it? Now. You know, Starbucks made a killing. Killing. We were standing right in front of the Starbucks. And I mean, the place was mobbed. And then they started, you know, chanting like they were calling it Preparation H, which is really funny. You know, they meant well. But I will say this, and we have a great respect for police officers, but I will say that I wasn't very excited by the icky faces on the police officers. I don't know. They just looked icky to me. They looked, I didn't like their faces. And I opened my car door because my window's jacked up. I wanted to hear, like when I was driving down, I wanted to hear. So I opened up my car door. And then one of them told me to close my door. Like, fuck you. And I said it like under my breath. I said, fuck you, you idiot. You know, like kind of out loud, but not really. Like definitely not looking to start trouble. But the cops just seemed really stink. I'm sorry. They did. But, you know, anyway, as long as they keep their guns in their frickin' holsters. You know, I arrived late, so I don't know who I missed, but Heather Matarazzo really had one of the most powerful speeches, and she drew in, I think, the most thunderous roars from the crowd out of most of them. You know, she was talking, and in the middle of it, she said, "We voted for you. You know, we elected you. We got you in office. Now we expect you to uphold the Constitution, not the Bible." And I'm paraphrasing, but that really got a tremendous response from the crowd. Tremendous. Like they were, it was like a roar. I have a little snippet of video, but I don't know how to transfer it from my phone to the computer. But what a crowd, really. I mean, what an amazing gathering of people. I know that they've been gathering all week. They gathered at the Church of Jesus Christ, Latter-day Saints or whatever. I know that they gathered on Wednesday. I think, momentum is really high right now. We have a lot of energy. I left there feeling like, yeah, you know, we've just been slighted in a really big way, but we're willing to come together for this and we're willing to make noise, which is very inspiring. We cannot blame Republicans for this one. And, you know, I myself am guilty for villainizing certain parties. And I've realized after this election, I realized that, you know, the two-party system is just, I don't even want to get into it, but there's definitely a lot of work to do. I can't remember what movie I was watching. What movie was it? It was some movie, and it was about animal rights. And these people went, and they opened up the gates for the herds of cows that were going to be eventually slaughtered. And they opened up the gates, and the cows wouldn't run out. And they were so angry. They were like, "What's wrong with those stupid cows? Like, why won't they, you know, run out? Like, you're free." And they were talking to the cows. They were saying, you're free. Run, you stupid fuck." I think I remember something. I can't remember what movie it was. And if anybody knows which movie it is, please let me know. But I feel like marriage is lifting the gate. Staying in civil unions is staying in the gate. It's like saying yes to my oppression. If it's confusing for you, try to think of it that way. It's not equal. Civil unions is just another word for discrimination. That's all it is. Why is it a problem to call it marriage? Why? Why is that a problem? You like to rent porn and watch the lesbians fuck, right? To watch the fake lesbians. Why does it bother you so much if they love each other? Why does love threaten these people? I don't know, like, why? Why does it? I don't know. I have no idea what I'm saying right now. I really don't. And, I've been screaming like a banshee. And I said to myself, stop screaming because you want to tape a show. Stop screaming, Sandy. Clap instead. Clap. Stop screaming. Clap instead. But I insisted on screaming, wooting and hollering. But I tell you, those gays can make some signs. But what else is going on? Oh, A Day Without Gays is next. So Google that. And I know that people turned out in really big numbers in a lot of places. People turned out for it. So join theimpact.com to see what's next. I guess we're looking to them to... I mean, what a brilliant idea. And I remember thinking when they were protesting, I was like, wow, we should really do one here in New York. But to do a national protest at every city hall throughout the country was just beyond brilliance. And I'm just really happy that I was part of it. And yeah. All right. Well, I will play for you part two of the Melissa Ferrick interview. All right. Here we go.
Yeah, that's me. Yeah, behind you. Hoping that you won't see that I am not all they make me out to be. But who'd let you see me? 'Cause I am not that pretty. Oh, but you will find out, and then you will leave me. So let me make up all sorts of excuses for why we shouldn't do this. Let me think that my heart is not involved. Let me think we are just using each other and we're equal in our faults.
I can't remember where I read this, but you said that you don't expect radio to be a big part of your career.
Uh-huh.
Has pirating, how has it affected your life, pirating and all that kind of stuff? Or is that a bad word to use?
When you say pirating, what do you mean, copying my CDs?
No, like people taking your songs off of the internet. You know.
Oh, not paying for it?
Yeah, yeah. How's that affected you, or has it? And
I'm sure it has. It doesn't make me angry. It doesn't bother me. My manager would have a very different answer for this question. She's very upset about it. But I feel like if somebody buys a CD, this is how my whole career has worked. You know what I mean? This was the same thing when it was cassettes. People would make cassette copies. They would make mixtapes, you know, and they would put my songs on it. And then somebody would discover me that way. And then guess what? They come to a show, and they give me $15 at the show, you know? And then if they come to a show, usually, they get turned on by the show, and they come again. Or then they might buy a T-shirt. Or then, at some point, they're going to buy something.
Right.
So yeah. I don't really need to make $7.50 off of every single person in every single way that I could possibly make it. I just really don't. I mean, if I did, I probably wouldn't be barely able to make my mortgage payments every month. I would probably make more money. Also, on the flip side of this, I have a very conscientious fan base. My hardcore fan base, they buy it online at iTunes and a physical copy when they come see me live. And they tell me. I don't have any issue with it at all.
That's the idea, right? Is to get your music out there.
Yeah, and art is, once you've put it out and someone's bought it, it's theirs, you know? And art is to be viewed and to be heard and to be shared, you know? And I got to believe that hopefully at some point, you know, music isn't going to end up in museums where you pay $10 and, you know, put headphones on and stand staring at a wall looking at, you know, some performance.
Right.
You know, it's like the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It's kind of like that, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, yeah.
I think artists that do allow you to copy will become the successful ones.
Right.
They'll have more people at live shows. There's just so much music that doesn't tour.
Right.
Even these big acts, like Madonna plays. She goes on tour, she plays 10 shows.
Yeah.
Like,
and she makes like $500 million.
That's a tour? That's 10 shows. It's like, yeah. I think I need to be in markets twice a year, if not three times a year. I think I could play Brooklyn three times a year. Because I think people forget. They don't have that day off. They can't be bothered.
Right.
They don't want to go. It's too late.
I'll just catch I'll catch it on YouTube.
Yeah, they just won't catch it. They'll just listen to it.
Right.
They don't want to go out anyway. People don't go out, you know? I mean, people stay at home. They're behind their computers. That's how I used to tour. Like, when I first started kind of really doing this indie scene thing in, like, 98, I played every single major city in the United States 3 times a year. And I almost killed myself doing it. You know, for about 4 or 5 years there, I just stayed in my car and circled the United States over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
I'm really hoping to get some really great summer tours this summer. I'm really, really hoping that the Indigo Girls give me some dates. I'm really hoping to get some more dates from Katie Lang. I'm really hoping to get more dates from Ani. And those are another friend of mine, Brandy Carlisle. She'll have a new record out next year. I'm sure she'll let me open for her. So if I can, you know, utilize these new relationships that I have with these women that are really incredible mentors for me and sell more tickets than me, if I can utilize these relationships to hopefully open their... I mean, I can't tell you, when I opened for the Indigo Girls, how many women came up to me. First of all, I sold an enormous amount of records. And how many women came up to me and said, I've never seen you before. I've never even heard of you. And I thought to myself, how is that possible? Where have you been? Like, how gay do you have to be? Like, I was like, really? And I'm thrilled, of course, because they're a new fan. It's true. It's like the 40-year-old to the 60-year-old lesbian has no fucking idea who I am. They've never seen me before. Maybe they've heard of me. Oh, that's that other Melissa. You know what I mean? Esther owes me some dates. I've had to live with that for so long. I love her. But, like, you know, it's just that market of women. They do hear me if they go to Michigan Women's Festival. You know, they'll see me there and they'll buy my record. But they're not going to go to the Bowery Ballroom. They'll go to Joe's Pub.
Right.
They want to sit down.
Right. I think, is doing lines mandatory at the Bowery Ballroom?
Really? Is there a lot of cocaine there?
I'm trying to figure out, like, why can't we get them there, you know?
It's because they have to stand up. So funny.
Oh, my God, that is so true. You know what? And I say this also. I say, you cannot get me somewhere where I have to stand up to watch a show anymore. And I know it's really pathetic.
No, it's not pathetic. It's the reality. That's true. You should have seen these women at the Indigo Girls show. Let me tell you what they had. They had their beach chairs. Oh, yeah. All of them with their coolers. You know, they're all from up here, so they talk like that. They put their cooler down. I got my spot. I was here at 3 o'clock. I was here at 3 o'clock. I got my seat. I'm all set. They got their koozies or their cozies, whatever they put their beers in, you know. They're all set. They got their spot. They're not moving. You couldn't move one of those women from her seat. You know what I mean? You could be walking through the crowd with an infant and they wouldn't get out of your way. This is my side. I always sit on the Amy Ray side. But I gotta, you know, I kind of have to play two different shows. I have to play a show for the young ones and then a show for the ones that want to sit down.
Right. And the show for the ones that want to mosh.
Yeah, the young ones that want to mosh with their beer and they just want to hear Drive 8 time. Right.
I'm sure you don't get any moshing at your shows.
No, not yet. Thank God.
We're going to have to get you to write some, like, hardcore songs. Like,
yeah, I'm going to do a hardcore Christmas album. I'm going to send it up at the Jerry Falwell Museum, his church, when I'm touring, and I'm going to put it in the library under Christian music. It's going to be somebody at my house.
Is there somebody at your house?
No. It's weird, though.
Is everything okay?
Yeah, it's fine.
All right. I don't want to break in while we're doing...
Yeah, no. I mean, I live in such a small town.
All right. You know, I know that you're always... you're out in the clubs and the bars and stuff, and I know that you're sober, which is something...
Yeah.
Okay. And what's that like? What's it like playing... I mean, I'm not sober or anything, but I hardly ever drink, and...
It's weird, yeah. How is it?
It's
not difficult for me to not... Well, that's not really true. Sometimes it's hard to not drink, but most of the time it's not hard. And, I mean, I haven't had a drink in almost 12 years. And it's more just become a way of life for me now, you know? Like, it doesn't bother me when other people drink. People come to my house and have dinner and have wine. It doesn't really... You know what I mean? In the normal world, it doesn't bother me. The only time that drinking bothers me is when people are really intoxicated around me. It makes me very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of people uncomfortable. It makes me feel unsafe and, like, nervous. And a lot of times after a show, which has been happening more lately, which is that people want to get their picture taken. and they're drunk.
Oh, yeah.
And they don't realize that they're drunk, because that's really usually what happens, you know, when you're in a bar and you don't know how much you've had to drink and you're having a really good time, and then you're going to get your picture taken with the artist, and they're holding their beer, you know what I mean? And they put their arm around me, and if somebody spills beer, I have to get in my car.
Yeah.
And so basically, you've now put alcohol on my jeans, or, you know, you spill, it's just, I don't want it, like, on my, I gotta go to a laundromat, it's a pain in the ass, you know?
Yeah, sure.
It's like, if you were at a club and somebody spilled their beer all over you, you'd be pissed.
Yeah, sure.
You know, what if you get pulled over on the way back from the show?
Right.
Cops gonna think you were drinking, and I don't need that, you know?
Sure.
Besides the fact that people get, you know, they try to grab me, they grab close to my breast when they put their arm around me, they try to grab my ass, they kiss me on the cheek, without, you know what I mean? Just, and I think that that's like, you know, the reason I quit drinking was because I lost my ability to make a choice. The booze was making the choice, you know. I wanted to, you know, make out with your girlfriend, I was going to do it because I wanted to, you know what I mean? So it kind of like my morals, my kind of do unto others just went right out the window. So when I'm around people that are highly intoxicated, it reminds me of myself, which is really good because it helps me not want to drink anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It reminds me what it feels like to be hungover and to be embarrassed and to do something that you didn't mean to do. So I have a lot of sympathy, but my patience runs very, very thin. And after shows, especially if it's a late night and I've been on the road for a while, or and I'm hungry and the show's over, and it's always a few people, it's like always a couple people that ruins it for everybody else. You know,
yeah.
Like there'll be this group of really fantastically nice girls who've been waiting, and they're, you know, they just want to have their picture taken and say hi, and there's, you know, they're so awesome, and then there's the one girl who's drunk, and it's usually the pretty one who's like, brings up, like, I feel like I'm in high school, you know?
Yeah.
Like the popular girl is pissing me off. And I really want to hang out with the geeks. And she, and there's the popular girl, and I don't like her.
Wow. Isn't that something?
Oh, yeah. So, you know, sometimes I have the club guy remove the popular girl, and then she gets mad, and she, like, yells something at me, and I'll never come to your show again, you know? And I'll be like, fine, don't ever come. Don't come again. And then the geeky girls are like, you're awesome. And I'm like, yeah, you didn't need it. You guys want to hang out. Let's hang out. So,
do you think that it's a problem in the community?
Drinking and drugs? Yeah, I do. I think it's a problem, period. But I think, look, you know, a lot of people drink because they're ashamed, and a lot of people drink because they're depressed. You know, there's sayings like, I drank because I was happy, I drank because I was sad, you know? I did, you know, I did all of that. I start to hear about abuse within the community, physical abuse amongst women.
Right.
Really, really bothers me. Abuse bothers me, period, any kind. So if you add alcohol into the picture, it's liquid courage, you know? It's false, you know?
Yeah.
You're not who you are, you know?
Right.
I don't believe that. You know, some people say, you know, well, sometimes, you know, if you just drink a little bit, you say things that you couldn't have said. And I'm like, that is such bullshit. Like, no, that's not, you can say the truth. You can tell the truth.
Right.
Alcohol doesn't make you tell the truth. Alcohol makes you fucking lie. Because let me tell you, that's what it does. You know, it makes you say stuff you regret, and it makes you lie.
Yeah, and do really stupid shit.
Yeah, it makes you do things you regret that you have to apologize for later and tell the truth for later. So how about just telling the truth?
Right.
But I think that I do know a lot of people that drink normally, that, you know, enjoy going out and having a couple glasses of wine or getting a little buzzed, and they're very normal about it. So
right.
I know people that smoke pot, like, you know, recreationally. I don't, but that's fine with me if people do. I don't. As far as, like, in my work, you know, I think I have some nights where I'm more sensitive to it than others, and I think that that's really human. I think that there are just some nights where I'm like, I just can't take it anymore. I can't, if, you know, sometimes it is. It's some nights at the end of the show, it's like, if I have to play in one more bar, I'm going to fucking kill myself. You know, like, I get back in the car. I mean, I'm not really going to kill myself, but
right.
I do get to that point sometimes, yeah, where I think, you know what, I would rather manage a Starbucks than have to deal with this drunk-ass sound guy. Fucking stupid. You know, and there are those gigs, but
right.
No, people have bad days at work, too. It's the same thing.
Yeah, yeah, right.
So I can spend all my energy just complaining about everybody else or just, you know, try to be all freaking spiritual about it and let it go and move on. And I'm better at it some days than others.
When did you realize that it was a problem and you said, you know what, it's really time? Like, was there one defining moment that you said, you know what, I think, you know, it's time for me to maybe talk to somebody about this?
You know, I stopped when I was 26, but there were moments before that while I still was drinking that I kind of knew that I probably wasn't going to be able to control and enjoy my drinking at the same time.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Where I couldn't say, I'm just going to have 3 beers tonight. You know, while I was about to finish the second one, I was already upset about the fact that I could only have one more. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
There's no enjoying the moment or enjoying. It was really about just getting numbed out.
Right.
Was there a moment? Yeah, there was a moment on a train from Los Angeles to Boston where I was drinking in the drinking car and smoking in the smoking car. And my girlfriend was in the car where we were supposed to be sleeping on this romantic train trip across the country, and I couldn't get out of the drinking car, you know, because I would rather be there than be with her, you know?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So that's what I mean by, like, when you're not making the choices anymore, I wasn't in my real self, in my real consciousness. I would never choose to hang out in a bar, a smoke-filled, no-air train bar, rather than be in a bed with somebody I loved.
Mm.
I mean, like, so, but what alcohol chooses is the bar.
Mm.
No, and that's when kind of you lose your ability to kind of make decisions that are actually healthy for you. And I was in that bar and I was judging everybody else because, alcoholism is a pretty selfish disease, you know, and you do it because you want to do it. And so everything that you do is based in selfishness. You want to drink, you want to leave, you want to fuck, you want to break up, you want to buy that, everything is just...
Yeah.
A tornado, you know, and I just, I got up to get another beer from the bartender, and when I put the beer down, the empty beer I was drinking, I went to order another beer, and I had a moment, which some people call a moment of clarity, some people call it, like, you know, God, or I just consider it a divine intervention, a type of moment where I heard my own heart, you know, where I heard my own soul, and it said, that's it. And that was it. And I didn't order the beer, and I walked back, and I haven't had a drink since. It was very, like, poignant for me. But I also come from a family of recovery, so I knew where to go, you know?
Yeah.
I don't want to break my parents' kind of anonymity here, but, you know, I come from a place where I know where to go and where to get help, and I also know that it's hereditarily, I was just absolutely set up for it, you know?
Right.
I don't know that I won't drink again. I don't know that, you know, I really don't know any of that. I'm pretty, like, a day-to-day sober person. Like, there's a lot of me that sometimes thinks people change, lifestyles change, our DNA changes. I mean, there's that whole thing, too, that fucks with my head sometimes, you know, and
right.
Maybe if I could just have a glass of wine, it would be really nice, or maybe if I was in Italy. If I'm in Italy, I mean, I'm really going to go to Italy and not have a glass of wine with pasta? I mean, how terrible is that, you know? But then I think, well, how terrible is the insane asylum? Like, or jail, you know what I mean? Like, it would be just like me to have, like, the one glass of wine and then, like, get in a car accident.
Be in Italian jail.
Now, yeah, totally. I'll be in an Italian jail. But then, of course, my head immediately goes to, well, but maybe the chick working at the jail would be really hot. That's how much of a fucking alcoholic I am, that I would actually have the glass of wine just so I could hang out in the jail with the hot chick. You know what I mean? Like, so fucked up. Like, how about just don't have the glass of wine and find the hot chick and take her on a date outside the jail?
And enjoy the pasta.
Right, exactly. And the bubbly water and the fantastic, you know, apple cider, you know? Sometimes it has to be that simple. Like, how important is it for me to have that? Like, if I was allergic to lobster, I wouldn't eat lobster.
Yeah, right.
But that's what's so weird about alcohol is it's like, it's that disease, because they've claimed it a disease, that tells you you don't have one.
Yeah, very intelligent people can fool themselves into very silly thinking.
Oh, it tells you you that you're not sick. There's nothing wrong with you. You're not allergic to alcohol, because that's what it is. I think ultimately it's that you have an allergy to alcohol. Like, I can't smoke pot. It makes me paranoid. I sit in the corner and cry, you know? Other people smoke the same joint, and they chill out, and they eat, and they laugh.
I can't do the pot thing either anymore. I can't.
You know, like, it's got to be that I'm allergic. It reacts differently in my body.
It could also be age. Maybe we just outgrew it.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I was never chilled out. Anytime I ever smoked pot, even when I was in high school, I was like, oh, my God, there's, like, bugs on me, you know?
I read that you have some issues with panic, which I totally relate to.
Oh, God, I'm sorry, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's awful. But so do you think that it all ties into the drinking and stuff? And
yeah, actually, my therapist has told me that panic disorder and post-traumatic stress disorder, which is I have post-traumatic stress disorder, is really prevalent in people who come from addictive families, addicts, people who are addicts or came from alcoholic families. Basically, you drink, you've self-medicated yourself for years, and then you stop doing that. And, you know, I think it was about 3 years sober, sitting in a meeting, and had my first panic attack. Couldn't move.
Wow.
Went to the hospital, and my heart was going like 148 beats a minute or something ridiculous like that.
Did you think you were having a heart attack?
Oh, my God, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't move, and I was going to die. I mean, now, if I have a panic attack now, I seek outside help, and I'm on a medication, and I've been on different medications, and I've not been on medications. And, you know, right now in my life, I need to be on one, you know, and
okay.
I have no shame in admitting that at all. It's really what works for me, you know.
Of course.
And
who wants to go to the hospital every other week?
Not me. And, you know, yoga doesn't work for me, so it's really great that some people seem to think that I should be able to just eat, like, a lot of cantaloupe and stretch, and that's going to fix it, but it really doesn't. I'm all for, like, alternative medicines, but, yeah.
Cantaloupe is supposed to give you really good skin, though. I know that.
Yeah, well, I like cantaloupe, but, you know, it's just like those funny emails I get from people who are like, if you eat 8 cantaloupes a day, you probably won't have to take the Lexapro anymore. And I'm like, yeah, that's great, or I could just take the Lexapro.
Do you have any tattoos?
Yeah, lots of them, yeah.
How many?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
That's a lot of tattoos.
7? 7? Yeah, 7 or 8.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's your favorite candy bar? Or do you have one?
I don't eat candy bars very often, but when I do eat a candy bar, it's really boring. It's a Snickers or peanut M&Ms.
Yeah, I like Snickers, too.
But I have some frozen mini Snickers are in my freezer, but I, like, literally will have a candy bar twice a year.
Oh, you're really good.
I don't have a very big sweet tooth.
You're really good. And the last question is, what's your porn name?
My porn, oh yeah, it's, my first animal and my first street, that's what we're going for here, right?
Right, right.
The Rascal Prospect. It's kind of like, I'm like a high-flutant English whore. Like, I'm like the butler, or like, see, I'd rather be the butler because I want to be the boy, but I could be like the maid, with like the, see, that doesn't work for me already, like, I can't really, I mean, I could pretend for like a night that I was like that. It'd be great.
What's your MySpace address?
MySpace.com/Melissa Ferrick, yeah, that's it.
And what's your website address?
MelissaFerrick.com.
And we could get your stuff on iTunes. And I also have, I think your people sent me a autographed CD from you. Do you remember signing anything yet?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, wonderful. So I'll go pick that up and I'll have like a contest and raffle that off or something.
Oh, wait a minute. I'm supposed to sign a CD.
Yes.
It says something in the email. There's a CD giveaway.
Yes.
Okay, so I'm supposed to send that to you.
Yes, you're supposed to send it to me.
Do I sign it to someone particularly or just my name?
It's... Oh, that's a good question. I don't know how.
You could see who wins, and then I could do it to them, and I could send it to you, but...
Yeah, that's good. I'll,
Then why don't you email me...
Okay.
...when you have the winner's name.
All right, I will...
I'll be on the road, and it'll just be easier for me to grab that email and send it.
Okay, wonderful. All right, how am I going to end this? You've been so amazing. I can't even, like, deal. I can't deal. See, now I'm going to have a panic fit now. You've been so incredible. You're such an inspiration to so many. I know your fans are, like, insane about you. They're so maniacal.
Oh, good. That's good. That's awesome.
You're just, you know, you're you. You're you. So thank you so, so much, Melissa.
Tell your fans to email Ellen and tell her that I want to come on her show.
Okay. As a matter of fact, I'll do that myself.
All right. And I want to do, I'm going to have to videotape a little something for Rosie and send it to her website. Because doesn't she have some sort of crazy website?
She does. She has her, is it Rosie something? I don't know.
Something like, my friend Sheila is obsessed with her. So she goes on it all the time. And she's from Ireland. Okay. And she always says to me, you've got to get on the Rosie O'Donnell. I'm going to email her and tell her that she's got to have it on her thing and blah, blah, blah. And then she keeps telling me to, because I have one of those flips, you know?
Yeah.
Flip myself, being like, hey, Rosie, it's Melissa Ferrick. I'm just... love you, you know, blah, blah, blah.
You know, you so got to do that because she's really very, she participates with the people that visit her site a lot. She's always taking pictures from them and making little videos.
Yeah.
And stuff.
And so those cruises that she does are just amazing.
Yes. I was on her very first cruise and it was.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, it was, I can't even begin. It was just out of this world. She's one of the most generous people. I went with two sergeants, NYPD sergeants, and
wow.
She gave us such a tremendous break. You know, she's just a very generous person. Nobody can say.
Incredible. Yeah.
Say what you want about Rosie, but she's one of the most generous people out there.
Oh, listen. I think she's a genius.
So do I.
Yeah.
And she has a variety show coming out.
I've been on the torch for a long time, you know?
Yeah. She's got a variety show coming out now, too, I heard.
Really? That's cool.
Yeah. It's going to be, I think, it's going to be on one of the major networks. So.
That's great.
Yeah. That's fun.
I was so mad when she didn't get that Price is Right gig. She really wanted that.
You know, I didn't hear about that.
Remember how Drew...
Oh, that's right. She was going for that?
She really... Well, she always said that, you know, she... I don't know that she necessarily really wanted it, but I know that she had watched Price is Right when she was a kid every day.
So did I.
Bob Barker's Place, which would have been great. She would have been perfect at it.
Sure, but you know what? I like when she's raising hell.
Yeah, and she couldn't have done that on that show that much. You're right. It wouldn't have been as...
Yeah.
As kind of out there as I loved her regular Rosie show.
Yeah, and I like when she's exposing, you know, 9/11 and doing all kinds of crazy things.
Yeah, she's awesome.
Yeah.
I'll have to go visit her in Florida or something.
And go, like, jet skiing. And she lives up here.
I'll hang out and, like, play my guitar in her front yard and see if I could dress up in my maid outfit and be...
I think she'd probably really like that.
Be Rascal Prospect for me. I should do a side project called Rascal Prospect.
You so should do that.
Awesome.
I think the fans would really, really like that.
Oh, God, that's a great idea.
Maybe one day in the future, you might come back on again and do this again.
Oh, I think that's a great idea. I'd love to.
You've been an amazing guest.
Oh, good. Well, let's definitely do it again and get me on my... Make sure I keep my word about this, my plan for next year to try to really solidify my existence in these markets.
That's right.
Really get back on this touring horse of doing these parts of the country that have been so good to me for so long, which includes you. So it should make your listeners happy.
That's right. We'll get you out there.
Awesome.
All right.
Thanks so much.
Thank you so much. Really.
All right. I'm going to go look at Angelina Jolie now.
All right. Enjoy the movie.
Okay, I will.
All right. Good night.
Bye.
Bye-bye. So hope you guys enjoyed this. I had great fun doing it. I would like to thank Melissa Ferrick for being an amazing guest. And I'd also like to thank Heather from Ruby Fruit Radio for seeking me out for this and to Aerial Publicity. If you're a musician, you may want to check them out. The person who won the CD giveaway was the first person to leave a comment with the top three favorite Melissa Ferrick songs. And that was Stephanie from Boston. And to everybody else who commented with your favorite songs, thank you so much for participating in that. That was a lot of fun. But you can catch her stuff on iTunes. Yeah. What else? I think that is it for now. Peoples, I think it's it. Is there anything else? Anything else? I don't know. I feel like I'm forgetting something. I'm kind of tired at this moment. So I feel like my mind is just not here. But all right, so I will talk at you guys again very soon. Ta-ta, bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye, bye-bye, bye-bye. Bye-bye, bye-bye, bye-bye. Bye-bye. I got a floor to dance on. I got a phone to laugh in. I got a tub to
to crying. I got a bed to hide in. Oh, but sometimes I only see what's wrong. And sometimes I'm convinced my God has up and gone. I'll never write a hit song. My love will leave me hanging. Yeah, but everything I need is right here in my hands. Right here in my hands. Right here in my hands. Everything I need is right.